The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Songs of Experience, that of course is the name of the new U2 album. Nadine O'Regan has heard it all. John Cadell's heard part of it. We brought them back again tonight to review it, because this is the first opportunity. This is the day, I believe, John, that newspapers were given the opportunity to write for the first time about it.
Yeah, there was an embargo on doing any sort of review until the 22nd. So I believe you were telling me, Nadine, the Examiner have already done a review of the album.
Yeah, they did run a piece today. Also, the Sunday Independent said a few words about it recently, and Hot Press's Olaf Tyrensen also weighed in on Twitter. So I think it's fair to say the embargo is officially out of the way. People can talk about it now. Well, the embargo now, the songs that are unreleased as of yet can still not be played on radio. That'll have to wait until December 1st. But as we all know, so many of the songs have already been released in one format or another. Another song surfaced today, I think, on Spotify. So you two are doing something quite interesting. Rather than actually going to the bother of trying to put their album into everyone's iTunes libraries, this time round, they're doing that kind of soft release of a number of tracks to sort of build up anticipation.
Hang on, that's something very old-fashioned. Remember the way singles used to get released before the album was eventually released.
Matt, I don't know.
Matt.
But you wouldn't be old enough now to remember this, Matt, but singles used to be released and then albums on which those singles didn't appear would follow. There were like there'd be non-album singles the whole time.
There was
that the early days of U2?
That was in the early days. That was in the early days of music.
You think there was music before U2?
Well, some would say no. Some would say there wasn't.
All right. Okay. Well, look, we're going to talk a little bit about Songs of Experience. We'll play snippets from some of the tracks that we're allowed to play. I suppose something I should notice as well, earlier this year, wasn't it the case as well with Arcade Fire? They released a number of tracks, Foo Fighters, and then you downloaded those, you could get used to those, and then you could download the rest come release day.
I think it is an intriguing way into an album. I think it was done particularly successfully by somebody like Taylor Swift, because her first single, or the first track that emerged from the new album Reputation, was markedly different from what she had done before. And then when the album came along, the album in some respects is partly a comfort blanket for people who love the original Taylor Swift, the more country orientated or pop orientated artist, but then that first single signals a really radical change of direction. So it's a good way of sort of getting an idea of a new sound out there without fully committing by, you know, bringing the album
out.
It's called
a single. It's called
I don't know what that word is,
decades.
John. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Here's the single. We're going
They're
to
not releasing singles necessarily anymore. These are songs that they put on Spotify. It doesn't mean it's released as a single. There is actually a difference.
Oh, because I was told the track that's currently available to Spotify, we're going to play it because it has been released as a single.
Okay, but the Blackout, for example, wasn't a single.
It was a taster.
Yeah.
It was called
horrific.
No, it was called what you call an instant grat track, which is a disgusting term.
That actually sounds horrific.
Instant
John.
Grat. Ugh. But the Blackout, to me, not to put the cart before the horse, is still my favourite thing I've heard from Songs.
But that wasn't what I was about to play.
Oh, all right then. What are you going to play?
American Soul.
That's my second favourite.
Blessed are the bullies. For one day they will have to stand up to themselves. Blessed are the liars, for the truth can be awkward.
Okay, that's just a taste, an instant grat, is that what you called it, or whatever, of American Soul. Now, is that representative of the entire album, Nadine, as you've heard it?
I think that's representative of the more forward-thinking songs on the album. There's a couple of for my money, key tracks on the album that are a little bit more pop-orientated, smoother, and more of a piece with what you might find on, I suppose, the pop charts in the States these days. So American Soul is definitely one of those. Kendrick Lamar, of course, guesting on it, and he is such a major figure in US hip-hop right now. And the other track that comes immediately after it is a track called Summer of Love. And that song, I found myself, I couldn't think of the song that it sounds exactly like, and I was all over the internet trying to think of it. You know, when you hear a little yes. sliver or something and you're like, what is it like? What is it like? What is it like? And the reference points that I found myself bringing up were mad reference points, because I was like, is it Avicii? Is it Ed Sheeran? And these aren't reference points you would immediately think of when it comes to you too. And actually, had that song been written and had it been somebody else other than Bono singing it, had it been, for example, Ed Sheeran, it would have sat perfectly convincingly on one of his albums. And that's both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing in the sense that for me, it would connect very instantly into the pop charts of today. And I think it's the song that if I were them and I was trying to have a go at that market, that I'd be thrown out there for sure. In the same way that American Soul feels contemporary, feels a little bit edgy, and is quite minimalist and subdued in its production in some ways. Well, I mean, for you too.
That was a
but
pun.
Then
the thank you.
All right. Gotcha. But the rest of the album, large parts of the rest of the album, a lot of the time what they do is they kind of flirt with the idea of difference on the verses, and then the choruses keep coming back to very, very old school, comforting U2 style elements. You know, so you see like City of Blinding Lights, or you think of some of even sort of Acting Baby at points. But it's an album that's actually most notable, funnily enough, for Bono's lyrics. Bono is really concerned about himself on this record. Like, he's given out to himself almost the whole way through, giving out about his attitude towards fame, giving out about his attitude towards, I think, the band and the way he's always outward looking and his own sense of ambition. He keeps telling himself on this record, go back, look at your family, look at what's really important, look at what you need to be looking at, and stop being a dope.
But he had, and we still haven't got the details of it, he had some sort of a personal apocalypse during the summer or earlier in the year. I mean, they said they stopped work on Songs of Experience when Trump became president, and they had to sort of realign and decide, well, are we going to make this album a bit more topical? But tied to that, it came out months later, I think in an interview with Q magazine, Bono says that he had his own, what appeared to have been, and I'm not 100% sure on this, some major health scare, which made him go back and...
Yeah, he won't even talk about it.
Yeah, reassess.
Which has made him introspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe made him realise, you know, that what's close to home is most important.
Yeah, and it's worth noting as well, with five producers on this record, there were so many different iterations of the record, and in the end they went back, they re-recorded, as far as I know, most of it with Steve Lillywhite, and then incorporated overdubs from the other producers, kind of creating a hybrid animal. But the impression I'm getting is that there were very, very different versions of this record. And what one of the producers, Ryan Tedder, was saying was, I think actually it's going to be very interesting to hear the remixes or the other versions that will probably emerge as time goes on, because I suspect they might be quite different.
Okay, listener says, is it just me or does Bono have a fair bit of a Dutch accent? Must be the influence of hanging out with all his money. And another one, what's the fascination with this old Dutch rock group, which I suppose is the big sort of turning point in many people's relationship with U2, came when, for tax reasons, the band, the corporate entity, moved offshore in 2006. But the fascination, I would argue, John, is that they're the biggest musical thing that's ever come out of this island.
Yeah, I mean, like...
And you can't ignore that culturally.
No,
they have been a phenomenon.
No, of course. And the whole thing about U2 and their tax, I just draw a veil over my mind when I hear about it. I'm not going to apologise to them. I'm not a U2 apologist. What they do business-wise is what they do, and no different, I would imagine, than what many huge corporations do. They sort of are tax efficient. Now, that doesn't get in the way of my enjoyment of their music.
Yeah, and let's just talk about the music tonight, okay?
I mean, U2 for years, for me, have been a great source of comfort. They're one of the bands I go to when I'm feeling a bit bad. You know, and they're, like we were talking about R.E.M. a few weeks ago, they're a warm band. There's a sort of like...
Your comfort blanket.
They're one of them, yeah, one of them. And, I mean, over the years, U2, there are at least on every... And I've not heard this one. There are at least three or four absolute classics on every U2 album. Every U2 album, even the ones that are rated poorly.
Actually, there's a track called The Little Things That Give You Away, which was the closing track that they played in Dublin. And it left people mystified at the time because they'd never heard it, they didn't know what it was. It's a fairly subdued number, but I just have this funny feeling, and I think they played it for a reason. I think it's going to be one of those ones that creeps up in you, because when you hear it first on the album, you're like, oh, okay, but it's longer than the others. It has something about it.
It sounds a bit like Phil Collins at the start, doesn't it? It's got this sort of 808 drum machine.
You know I love Phil Collins.
And then a Roland piano or something. I mean, I saw a live version.
Let's hear a little bit more, because we were playing very little music. You mentioned the Blackout, so let's hear a little bit of that.
That is what I want from you two. That sounds like the four of them in a room pressing play on a tape machine. That is what I want from you two. And I hope that in the near future they will record an album. And it could be this one, where it's the majority of it is just live in a room.
Okay, you haven't heard it in full, John, yet for various reasons. Nadine, you have. I'm going to finish with you. John Cadell's from rockylike.com. Nadine is the presenter of Songs in the Key of Life here in Today FM and arts editor of the Sunday Business Post. And I know the Business Post doesn't do star ratings.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me for star ratings.
One, two, three, four, or five?
I would give it, for me, it's a 3 to 3.5. And
that's a rather muted response.
I think it's a very solid effort from the band. I think it's straying towards the traditional U2, which fans of theirs will find immensely comforting, but it may not bring in people under a certain age or who aren't familiar with the U2. That said, well produced, interestingly executed, but not a home run.
Thank you very much, Nadine and John. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday. I look forward to your regular music slot.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.